Blog Talk Radio.
Boss it. This here's a jam for all the fellas. Try to do what those ladies tell us. Get shot down cause you're overzealous. Play hard to get females, get jealous. Okay, smarty, go to a party. Girls are scantily clad, showing body. A chick walks by, you wish you could sex her, but you're standing on the wall like you was Poindexter. Next day's function, high class luncheon. Food is served in your stone cold munching. Music comes on, people start to dance, but then you ate so much you nearly split your pants. A girl starts walking, guys start gawking. Sits down next to you and starts talking. Says she wanna dance cause she likes the groove. So come on, fatso, and just bust the move.
Hello and welcome to Debate Wednesday. I'm your host, King Julian. We got a special episode here today as we are going to be discussing Brittany Griner of the Baylor Bears, the Chicago Bulls, without Derrick Rose, but trust me when I tell you, but Derrick Rose will be back very soon with the Chicago Bulls. Stephen Stamkos, he's been wonderful. We're going to talk about if he could possibly once again surpass 50 goals. We're going to be discussing Lindsey Vonn and the recent incident with Caleb Moore. We're going to discuss those two things. And other than that, we're going to also be talking about Kyrie Irving and, for you MMA fans out there, Alistair Overeem, who just recently lost in UFC 156 to Antonio Silva. So today I am joined here with Sean. Sean, how's it going?
Oh, I'm here. Good to be on the show again. It's good to finally have a Debate Wednesday show again.
Yeah, it's been a few months, and it's been a long it's been a long time coming. As we're also joined here today by Maxwell Ogden from Bleacher Report. Max, how's it going?
Not bad. How are you?
Not bad at all. So we got a special show here today, Debate Wednesday. Yep, had to get that out of the way. Before we get started, the number to the show today is 646-716-5733. Once again, 646-716-5733. The chat room is open. You can put in hashtag Debate Wednesday. And also, one other mention, go to our recent weekly blog if you are at all interested in possibly becoming part of SK. So, with that, I want to first start off with Kyrie Irving. Man, what a season. I mean, only in his second NBA season, Kyrie Irving has managed to be in the top 10 of players with the most points per game. Kyrie Irving, in fact, leads the league in points per game as far as point guards go. He is the dominant leader in points per game as a point guard. Kyrie Irving, he's been amazing, irregardless of the lack of support Cleveland somewhat does not bring to the franchise, as always. Kyrie Irving, he's been a vital player ever since he's came from Duke and straight into the NBA. I mean, I want to first get off to Max, where I want to ask you, is Kyrie Irving amazing or what, of what he's doing in his second year in the NBA? And plus, do you think he should start in the All-Star game?
I mean, with Rondo out, with Derrick Rose out, it would be hard to say anyone but Kyrie Irving should start. I mean, Jrue Holiday is another option, but I don't think we've seen – I forget about win-loss record. Kyrie Irving is one of the best fourth-quarter performers in the NBA already. He out-dueled Kevin Durant the other night, and the Cleveland Cavaliers actually beat the Oklahoma City Thunder 115-110. And just for the record, Kyrie Irving scored 35 points during that game on 12-23 shooting. As for should he start if Rondo was healthy, no, Rondo is still the better point guard. And I think the question that's going to be raised in future seasons is Kyrie Irving actually a point guard? You know, 5.5 assists, I know it's only his second season, but you look at his scoring is so much further along than his ability to facilitate. Now, I know he doesn't have a lot of players around him to pass to. The key for Cleveland will be, can they put the necessary jump shooters around him, the catch and release kind of guys who, when Kyrie Irving is on the drive, he can actually dish it after them. A lot of people thought Deion Waiters would be that guy, but I don't really know why. Deion Waiters has never been a solid shooter. He's only shooting 32% of the rookie this year from beyond the arc. That's the type of shooting you're going to see. When people say he's a Dwayne Wade type of player, he's a Dwayne Wade type of player. He gets his points in the paint, he doesn't shoot. And right now Cleveland has no shooters. And to me, that's why what Kyrie Irving is doing is so incredible. It's not just that he's averaging 24 points per game. He's shooting 47% from the field. He's shooting 41% from beyond the arc, 85% from the free throw line. And he did the same exact thing as a rookie last season. He's an efficient player. He has a very high player efficiency rating. He's a great on-ball defender. He struggles a little bit with ball watching when he's off the ball. But Kyrie Irving, he's a superstar in the making, and I think – the other night when he out-dueled Kevin Durant, he really said, you know what, I'm not a superstar in the making, I'm a superstar right now.
Yeah, and just as you were saying, Kyrie Irving is just doing incredible this year. If you look back from last year, he averaged 18.5 points per game, and now this year he's averaging about 24 points per game. This guy's just amazing, as you said. He beat the Thunder the other night, and as I went on to say before, the Cavaliers they're very well known to surround a star player like from before LeBron James and Kyrie Irving with guys who can just support. Guys like Kyrie Irving and LeBron James. I mean, there's just no support ever in Cleveland. They've picked up some draft choices in the past, like Deion Waiters, Tristan Thompson. But, I mean, you're really just seeing Kyrie Irving at a star level right now.
Yeah, and I do want to draw a quick parallel between Kyrie Irving and the NFL. To me, what Kyrie Irving and LeBron James went through in Cleveland is very similar to what Peyton Manning went through in Indianapolis, where it's almost like the general manager, in that case it was Bill Polian, in this case you have Cleveland, and specifically owner Dan Gilbert. It's almost like they say, all right, we have our star, now go out and win us something. It doesn't work like that. No individual has ever won a title. Period. No sport, specifically in the NBA, no individual has won a title. Michael Jordan, everyone talks about Michael Jordan. Michael Jordan didn't win until Pippen and Rodman and all of them came along. No, he won before Rodman, but that's the point. Kyrie Irving needs support if they're going to go from 14-34 to competing for the playoffs. And they've drafted well in recent years. A guy that a lot of people are not talking about is Tristan Thompson. He's having a phenomenal breakout season, 11 points and 9 rebounds. Maurice Bates has been a revelation since they got him in a trade. Wayne Ellington is shooting the lights out. So they're improving through the draft. They made a nice trade. I shouldn't say no one can shoot. Ellington can shoot. Daniel Gibson can shoot. But they still lack a small forward. Anderson Varejao is supposed to be their franchise center. But, yeah, it's nice that he's averaging 14-14. But this is yet another season that he's down with an injury. He's missed at least 50 games. In 2011, he missed 41 last season, and he's already missing the rest of the season most likely the rest of the season this year. And this isn't a new trend. It's been that way since his rookie season. When the Cavaliers acquired him from Orlando in 2004. So you have to wonder, when are they finally going to cut their losses? When are they going to try and trade him for anything at all? Because right now, all he is a salary cap hit, and they need to surround Kyrie Irving with talent if they ever want to make it out of the gutter.
Yeah, and I could see where you were talking about Tristan Thompson. I mean, I could see him starting to make some progress. I can see some of these other guys coming along, like Maurice Spates and Wayne Ellington from Memphis, starting to show they could have potential. But, I mean, as far as any stars or, I mean, any support you see ever on the Cleveland Cavaliers, I mean, it's just never – to me, it's just never a point in time where we actually see a go-to player for Kyrie Irving. And Kyrie Irving, he, you know, he's actually averaging 5.4 assists per game. I mean, he's averaging out huge number. I mean, yeah, huge numbers with 24 points per game, but he's just somehow not getting it done, you know, as far as penetrating goes. It's just very hard for him to, I feel, go to a guy on Cleveland and try to get things done and win games. But now I want to ask you, Sean, though, do you think, how do you think of Kyrie Irving's season so far, and do you think he should be in the All-Star game, which we've left that unanswered?
I want to say he is having a very good season so far, but with the injury to Rajon Rondo, I feel that he is All-Star worthy, but I think you have to look at Jrue Holiday from the Sixers. I think he should be in the All-Star game ahead, even though the Sixers are struggling. I know, I understand that, but still, I've liked what Jrue Holiday's done, and I'd give him a slight edge over Kyrie Irving for the All-Star vote to replace Rajon Rondo.
Well, I think the one thing that we also have to remember is it doesn't have to be a point guard. This is the All-Star game. They don't go in the traditional format. It just has to be a backcourt player. And I agree, Jrue Holiday's having an incredible season, 19-9. You don't mess around with that. But I think another guy you might have to consider, he plays small forward, but in the All-Star game he's listed as a backcourt player. Why not have Dwayne Wade team with Paul George at the Indiana Pacers? Paul George is averaging 17.5 points, 7.5 rebounds, and he's the anchor of one of the league's top defenses. So that's another name to consider as well.
Yeah, I can agree with you there too, Max. I think Dwayne Wade is one to be considered because look where the Heat are right now. The Heat are atop. They have a 19-3 home record. They're one of the top two teams in the Eastern Conference right now in the standings, defending NBA champions. So, yeah, I'd consider Dwayne Wade, too. But to get back to Kyrie Irving, I think he's having a very noteworthy season, though. But like you guys mentioned before me, I do agree he does need some help to completely turn around that Cleveland team and get it to a playoff team.
Definitely.
Yeah, I mean, I would really like, to be honest with you, since Jrue Holiday has been in the league for four years now, I really feel that Jrue Holiday in this situation should be the starter, but I mean, because of his experience in the NBA, but because of what Kyrie Irving's doing right now, I mean, I don't know, man. I think it could really come down to Kyrie Irving being in an Eastern Conference starting lineup along with great like LeBron James, Carmelo Anthony, Kevin Garnett, and Dwayne Wade, replacing Rajon Rondo.
Yeah, you do have to also think that the coaches are the ones who select it. And even if Jrue Holiday is the more deserving player, you could make that case. Philadelphia is a lot closer to the playoffs than Cleveland. But, I don't think there's anyone who's going to argue that. I just don't think there's going to be any coaches who argue that Kyrie Irving should be the guy. He just has that perception right now.
Yeah, most definitely. But now I want to stay in the NBA now and touch on the Chicago Bulls. The Chicago Bulls, they've been playing pretty good as most did not expect. They're right now 29-19. They're sitting tied with Indiana in the middle of the Eastern Conference right now. And I must say, they're holding off well without an elite player like Derrick Rose. And Derrick Rose, he's recovering from an ACL injury, and he's been starting to make a lot of progress from reports. He's getting closer and closer to finally stepping back on the court. And so I got to first go to you, Sean. With the Bulls folding up and Derrick Rose being expected to come back around the All-Star break, what do you see out of this Bulls team moving forward? Do you think they can make a very deep run in the postseason?
Especially when Derrick Rose does come back, for definitely they'll be even that much more dangerous. But a team that I like that you were just mentioning, Julian, a team for them to watch out for in their own division is, of course, Paul George and his Indiana Pacers squad. The Pacers are a very dangerous team, maybe just as dangerous as the Chicago Bulls. So while the Bulls will be a lot better with Derrick Rose back, but I will say this real quickly, too, about Derrick Rose. He's not going to come back once he does come back. Even though he's getting close to 100%, I still believe it's going to take a little bit more time for him to get get back to being on the court, because it's been, almost a year, actually 8 or 9 months. So it's going to take him a little bit longer to get worked up to game speed, but definitely the Bulls will be a team to watch in the Eastern Conference as we get closer to the playoffs.
Yeah, definitely. And I just want to also point out, since I've been realizing how we've been mentioning a lot of the Indiana Pacers, I want to go on record to say what a phenomenal season Paul George is having. And the other night against the Chicago Bulls, he had 21 points, 11 rebounds, and 5 assists. I mean, that really tells you something. Out of a very young player, I mean, I think Paul George is only 23? I mean, I think he's going to have a long, great future ahead for Indiana. But now, going to you, Max, though, what do you think about the Bulls moving forward of having star player Derrick Rose possibly coming back into the lineup?
I mean, the Chicago Bulls, what a lot of people are not really talking about with them is they're one of the best home teams in the NBA. I think we all know that. Yet they've only started out 15-11 at home. Now, with that being said, they've been dominant at home during the month of January. They're finally finding their form. We forget so easily that they started at 6-7. They've now gone 23-12 over their past 35 games. They're playing as well as anyone in the NBA. And forget about Derrick Rose for a second. They've been playing without Joakim Noah. They've been playing without Carlos Boozer. They've been playing without Kirk Heinrich. Every single game they play, it seems as if one of their starters is injured. And even still, they have the third-ranked scoring defense. They have their fifth in rebounds. They're 10th in assists without Derrick Rose. So what will Derrick Rose bring to this team? Derrick Rose, the first 47 minutes of the game, Derrick Rose doesn't mean a thing in terms of what's different about this team. If the Chicago Bulls, even with him, they're not an elite offensive team. They're still going to score in the 95-point range every night, and they're going to win and lose games based on how well they play defense. With that being said, Derrick Rose is one of the best clutch performers in the NBA. Much like Kyrie Irving, this is the kind of guy that when there's a minute, 2 minutes left on the clock and you're in a five-point difference, whether you're winning or losing, he's the guy who can close out the game for you or the guy who can spark a comeback. He's the guy who can go up against a LeBron James, who can go up against a Chris Paul, Kobe Bryant, et cetera, and be the difference. And to me, when he comes back, you're not going to see the same Derrick Rose. You're going to see a better Derrick Rose. And as Sean said, it's going to take time. He has to adjust to game speed. But we're only 48 games in. There are 34 whole games until the playoffs come around. So can this team make a run through the playoffs? I don't think they even need Derrick Rose to make a run in the playoffs. We all looked at last year and said, oh, they lost to Philadelphia in the first round because Derrick Rose went down. They didn't lose just because Derrick Rose went down. Philadelphia got hot. They were a talented team. And Chicago, they just got the life ripped out of them when that happened. So it was more about is he in or is he out. It was about emotions. It was about mentally they beat themselves because he was injured. So when he comes back, what difference is he going to make? I said at the beginning of the season, and I'm going to say it again, the Chicago Bulls are going to finish the regular season as the top team in the Eastern Conference. They've done it 2 years in a row, and what everyone seems to forget is Derrick Rose didn't just get hurt during the playoffs last year. Derrick Rose was injured for most of last regular season. We are so quick to forget that and say, oh, the Bulls can't win without him. The Bulls have been winning without him. The Bulls were winning without him last year, finished the regular season atop the Eastern Conference, with C.J. Watson and John Lucas III leading the charge at point guard. So can they make a run in the playoffs? Absolutely. Will they? Now, that's a different question. It's obviously all about matchups. If they end up finishing fourth, they have a tough first-round matchup, probably with Brooklyn or Atlanta. And then from there, you have to go on the road and play Miami, and we all know how hard that is. So to me, I think Chicago is better than every other team in the East besides Miami. And the only two teams who I think are going to give them trouble are the Heat and the Pacers. They have the Knicks number, and they play postseason-style defense. So right now, if you're looking Eastern Conference, look at Miami, look at Chicago, and look at Indiana. And when Derrick Rose comes back, it's going to be a whole different story.
Yeah, just great what you said, Max. 100% totally agree with you, Max, what you just said. The Bulls, I think, aren't going to have too hard of a time with Rose coming back. With how they've with how Thibodeau and the whole rest of that Bulls team has been able to hold and keep it with their ground. I think really the Bulls with Derrick Rose coming back is gonna make a major difference. I mean, even though, like you said, Max, Derrick Rose is gonna have to first get his feet wet and try to adjust back to his game on the court, I still think it's not gonna be hard in Chicago's case when they get towards the postseason. I mean, matchups could be a concern, but overall, though, I think this Bulls team could do pretty well. And although, let me just say this, though, in the Sixers' case, the 76ers, they're not even in the playoffs. Or, I mean, they're not in any of the spots from 1-8 right now in the Eastern Conference. They're actually in the 10th spot. And with Andrew Bynum coming back, and, you know, he's going to have to as well adjust back to his game, it's going to, I feel, take some time and possibly, I feel, hurt the 76ers, because the 76ers haven't been able to hold, I mean, they just haven't been able to hold their ground like the Chicago Bulls.
Yeah, and I think if we're talking about players who are going to need to get their feet under themselves, how about Andrew Bynum? I mean, at this point, I know Philadelphia 76ers fans are saying he's going to come back. I'm not sure he's going to come back this season. Plain and simple, I genuinely do not believe he's going to play a game. And the one problem that fans always had with him, coaches always had with him, teammates always had with him in Los Angeles is that, and I quote an article from earlier this year, he is the one player in the NBA who really doesn't seem like he enjoys what he does. And he never, you know, everyone talks about, oh, who won the Dwight Howard, Andrew Bynum trade? You know, the issue with both of them is it's not about off the court stuff. You know, Dwight Howard wanting to be traded from Orlando, blame Orlando because they put absolutely nothing around him the entire time he was there. Their second best players were Jameer Nelson, Ido Turkoglu, and Jason Richardson. You see Jason Richardson in Philadelphia. Does he look like a guy who's going to carry you to a title? Come on. Now, with that being said, Andrew Bynum's problem has always been on the court. He lacks motivation. And right now it just seems like with all these stories, oh, he went bowling and got hurt again. I understand that bowling is not a strenuous activity, but it's still an activity. You're being paid millions of dollars to keep your body in tip-top shape and to recover 100% from injuries. And this is what you're doing? So to me, if I'm Philadelphia, I'm saying, hey, I know you're all waiting for him to come back, but all you in the locker room, step it up because he's not coming back. And if he does, then we'll deal with it then. But don't expect him to do it because there's a good chance he doesn't.
Yeah, I totally hear you, Max. And like I said before, the Bulls, I don't think they'll have too much of a hard time, just like the 76ers could possibly have with Andrew Bynum, the way Andrew Bynum doesn't have that strong motivation just like Derrick Rose has.
Yeah.
But is there anything else you guys want to say before we move on to Lindsey Vonn and Caleb Moore?
I just want to say that whenever Derrick Rose gets back, and forget about how good it is for the Bulls, it's just going to be great for the league because right now the interest in the NBA is at a high. The NFL season just ended, and with the NFL season just ending, there is not a better time for Derrick Rose to come back and increase the interest in the league even more. He's an ambassador of the league. He's an exciting player, and all we can really hope is that he brings more to the game than he did before.
Continues tonight at 10. Yep. But as we get ready to move on now, I just want to remind our listeners the number to the show today is 646-716-5733. Once again, it's 646-716-5733. Now, I really want to talk about Lindsey Vonn and Caleb Moore. First off, Caleb Moore. He suffered a very, very bad concussion after falling off his snowmobiler, and it was just very unfortunate as news came about that he recently died. Prayers go out to the family of Caleb Moore. It's just a very tough tragedy. And going through. And then you have Lindsey Vonn. She tore MCL recently and also her ACL. I mean, that's just the same scenario that happened to Adrian Peterson of the Minnesota Vikings in the NFL. Yeah, it's just a devastating injury, two broken ligaments and your knee. It's a very tough thing as well to go through. And, I want to first start off with you, Sean, but do you think these days in sports like this, people who ski and snowboard or use snowmobilers, do you think that they should, people like this should take serious precautions to these kind of sports?
Yeah, sure. I mean, look, like you were saying, Caleb Moore, it was very sad what happened to him, although I come to find out not only did he suffer a concussion, he had bleeding in his heart, and then he eventually developed a further swelling or a further condition as a result of that concussion later in his brain, so some further swelling there. So that's what caused him to succumb to his injuries at such a very young age, 25 years old. I mean, you know, just very sad. And then with Lindsey Vonn, I mean, that's just, it's devastating because one of the world's, you know, most renowned female skaters is now going to be out for at least maybe 8 to 12 months. So, you know, one of the world's most renowned skiers will be missed while she recovers. But will she recover like Adrian Peterson? Probably not. I mean, only Adrian Peterson can do what Adrian Peterson did. And coming back from two torn and shredded knee ligaments and having a great comeback like he did. But I think over time, maybe the people of like the X Games as a result of this need to look at maybe some kind of further safety rules or regulations, something to help to where injuries like what happened to Vonn or even Caleb Moore in that instance won't happen in the future.
Yeah, and I want to also bring this up, but the Winter Olympics are about 1 year away already, and if you think about it, you know, with Lindsey Vonn just suffering this injury, I mean, I got to ask you a very important question, Max, but do you think Lindsey Vonn can do what Adrian Peterson did, which is come back and once again pull off a win for a country in the Winter Olympics next year?
I mean, the early reports are saying that they actually expect her to be back for the Olympics. Not only expect, but they're pretty dead set on, quote unquote, she will be back. And
well, yeah,
I don't know that she will. And you know, I don't. To me, this is we see Adrian Peterson come back, and suddenly, as a culture, as a sports culture, we say, okay, this is the new standard. This is what people will do with these injuries. It's not. RG3 could be out for a very long time. I know he said he plans on being there for opening day. You know, Rondo could be out for a very long time. And Lindsey Vonn, my question is this. Even if she were to come back and recover 100% by the time the Olympics begin, what we're all forgetting is the Olympics are an event every 4 years in which for 3.5 years, more or less, individuals are training nonstop, year-round, for these one or two events that they participate in, Lindsey Vonn included. So my question is, how in the world do you expect her to come back if she's not only going to be missing time recovering and not being able to be out there, but she's not going to be able to be training? So if she's not training, we're all assuming that, I'd say what, she's going to be healthy November, December, somewhere around there, and then start training. I don't think she should be going to the Olympics, because not only will she have a hard time getting back to 100%, but if she wins, it would honestly just, it would be nothing short of a miracle. And to me, live for another day, be able to walk when you're done with sports. You know, we talked about Chris Carpenter on Stone Sports, and Chris Carpenter is likely out for the 2013 season. And the reason is, I think he's thinking about life after retirement. And I think that's what Lindsey Vonn needs to do, because I'd rather be able to walk in the future than have a gold medal and not be able to.
Well, yes. You just nailed on the coffin there, Max. She really needs to take some serious precautions and think about her life ahead in general. It's very unfortunate that this had to happen between the longevity of as to where her injury is going to be leading into the Winter Olympics, which she really wants to compete in, and has gone on to say on Twitter that she wants to compete, but you're right. You gotta take serious precautions if you want to really think about your life ahead.
Yeah, and I do want to talk about Caleb Moore, which you brought up. I honestly don't even know why this is a sport. There's one thing when you have danger, and there's danger in every sport if we're gonna be real about that, but. To me, you're talking about flipping a 450-pound vehicle, and the average human being is unable to do something like that. And it's tragic with what happened to Caleb Moore, but what about also when the rider fell off of his snowmobile and it kept on going into the crowd and nearly killed more people? I mean, this is not only a danger to the people who do it, but a danger to the people in attendance. And I usually don't comment on things like this, but this is honestly my first year watching the snowmobile event, and I did watch what happened to Caleb Moore. I watched what happened when the snowmobile went into the crowd, and I've never felt this before, but when I watched it, I just said, you know what, I don't understand why this is a sport, and I don't think it should be.
Yeah. Before we get ready to move on to Steven Stamkos of the Tampa Bay Lightning, I just want to say one quick thing. In helping out the family of Caleb Moore raise money for medical costs, you can go to a website called www.giveforward.com/Caleb Moore. The family has created this website in support of medical costs and the recent death of Caleb Moore, which is just very all sad. But we got to move on now. So Steven Stamkos, last season became just the second player in 16 years to score 60 goals in a season. There have been talks about him possibly going for 50 goals this year and once again becoming the leader in goals in, seven of his last nine games he has scored a goal so far this season. I mean, starting off with you, Sean, do you think Steven Stamkos can possibly score 50 goals within a matter of 48 games this season?
I mean, the way he's at his rate right now, there's no doubt in my mind he could. I mean, Steven Stamkos is that good of an offensive goal-scoring machine. I mean, I think you have to put him up there in the upper echelon of NHL players. You have to mention him. I think it's safe to mention him in the same breath as guys like Evgeny Malkin or Sidney Crosby. I mean, he is just that dangerous of a player, and for that reason, barring an injury to him, which I never like to see people get hurt, so like I said, but barring that happening, I think the Tampa Bay Lightning could be a real serious threat to win the Eastern Conference and maybe even the Stanley Cup.
How about you, Matt?
Yeah, I mean, Stamkos, you know, what a lot of people don't talk about is Stamkos has a very nice luxury of playing alongside Martin St-Louis, who happens to be one of the best passers in the NHL. And, I mean, Stamkos is just a phenomenal, a phenomenal goal scorer. And I suppose you could say he's a major reason why St-Louis currently leads the NHL in goals. But, you know, Stamkos, it'll be tough to replicate what he did last season. But, you know, obviously he had that 8-game point streak, which ended against Philadelphia conveniently. But, yeah, I mean, he's one of the top players in the NHL. You can make a case that he's one of the top three guys. And, I mean, as Sean said, Tampa Bay, they've been there before. They have the offense to do it again. They're very good killing penalties. They're very good when on a power play. And as long as their goaltending can keep it up, there's no there's no reason they can't win their division, and there's no reason they can't make a run through the playoffs.
Yeah. I mean, this Tampa Bay Lightning team on paper just looked very flattering. To say, I mean, they're just all of us a very nice team on paper. I mean, they're with Steven Stamkos, and he could, like I said, put himself up there in the upper echelon of most goals out of a season. He's done it last season and some years before, and so Stamkos, he got a lot, do in the NHL as long as he just stays healthy. He could break records, I think, and do so many things as long as he just stays healthy, and that goes for all the rest of that Tampa Bay Lightning team, as we were just saying, they could possibly do very well in the playoffs this year.
However, I will just say this really quickly. That was a huge win for the Flyers to get over Stamkos and Lightning last night.
Oh, yeah, it sure was. I was watching the game, and it was a good win, very good win. And the Flyers need as many wins as they could get, especially against a team like the Tampa Bay Lightning. So that was very great. And plus, we got to see Matt Carl back in Philadelphia, and I didn't bring this up, but there were actually a lot of fights last night between the Tampa Bay Lightning and the Philadelphia Flyers. I don't know if you two didn't see the fights that happened last night, but they were quite a lot last night between the Flyers and Tampa Bay.
Yeah, I mean, it's a budding rivalry, I guess you could say.
Yeah, pretty much. All right, so now moving forward to Brittany Griner of the Baylor Bears. Brittany Griner, what can I say? She's once again putting on a phenomenal season. The Bears are ranked number one once again in the standings for women's college basketball. Brittany Griner could once again have that really good year as she did previous seasons with the Baylor Bears. She's projected to go number one the WNBA draft after she gets through her senior year this year over at Baylor. So I got to first ask you, Max, but is Brittany Griner just too good? And can we be seeing Brittany Griner as some legend in the WNBA someday?
Yeah, I mean, I've had people ask me, is she the best college basketball player in the history of women's basketball? I don't think she's the best. I don't think she's even close to the best, but is she the most dominant? Absolutely. That there's never been a woman in college basketball, or for that matter, professional basketball, that's as dominant a force as Brittany Griner. I mean, you look at her size and also her athleticism. And, you know, her only loss was a one-point loss to the woman who may be the most skilled player in the nation, Kyler Diggins in Notre Dame. But, you know, she has a chance to redeem herself. She has a chance to redeem herself against Connecticut, who lost to Notre Dame. And to me, you look at, you know, their only loss came against Stanford as their rival. And even then, you know, Brittany Griner, she shows up. She puts up 20 points. Recently, she's put up 40 points, 30 points. She just dished out a career-high 7 assists. In terms of dominance, you know, we've never seen a player like her. There's never been a woman in college basketball who can dominate a game this way. I'm not going to go out and say that she's the best player, though, because I still believe that, much like in any basketball game, the best player is usually reserved for a perimeter player, and I think anyone would agree that players like Maya Moore and Candace Parker, even go back to Diana Taurasi, might be the greatest, but in terms of dominance, we've never seen a player as dominant as Brittany Griner.
Yeah, and exactly my point. I've never seen a player like Brittany Griner before. I mean, she's just that dominant. And I can go out on a limb and just say I think she can become one hell of a player someday and really stand out in people's minds. As she's a woman. She's a woman, and I mean it's very it's just very rare how we discuss an individual like this, but I mean she's just really dominant. She's just that dominant. But I want to ask you the same question as well, Sean. I mean, isn't Brittany Griner just too good? She's just too good in the way the Baylor Bears have been able to stay dominant in women's college basketball and be projected number one. I mean, just explain to me, how do you deal with her, just the way she's just so good?
I couldn't agree more with you and Max, but I will say this. She reminds me of, this goes back in the day a little bit, but she reminds me of a female version, the way she could block shots and be dominant in the low post. She reminds me of a female version. I would call her, I have a new nickname for her, the female Bill Russell. I mean, she is that dominant down there in the low post where she could be mentioned in the same breath as Bill Russell. She is just unbelievable the way she can block shots and be physical down there in the low post. And for that reason, I mean, I know Skylar Diggins and Notre Dame are out there, and Gino Auriemma's troops up there in UConn, but I just don't see anybody getting in the way of Baylor winning their second straight national championship in women's college basketball. And for the matter, I think Brittany Griner is going to go on to the WNBA, and again, barring some injury, she's going to have about as dominant a career as you can have for a center, a female player of her size.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with you, Sean. Just the way you said, she's very dominant. She could be compared just like a legend such as Bill Russell is pretty damn good. She's just really good. She's leading the Baylor Bears through the way this year once again, and she's just so good. She's just so good to me, and she could remind me as a Bill Russell, to say.
I mean, she really does. I've never seen anything like Brittany Griner the past 4 years, and I'll tell you what, you probably will never see anything like Brittany Griner in women's college basketball once she does graduate and move on to the WNBA.
Yep, hopefully she doesn't become just a joke here, but hopefully she doesn't become a Kwame Brown in the WNBA. But, hey, what can I say, though? I think she's really good, and this Baylor Bears team could possibly, to me, once again win the whole thing this year. But now, since we have about 8 minutes left, I do want to discuss a topic that I didn't have in our plans, but I'm going to go ahead and talk about it with you guys. Recently, on the internet, from multiple sources, there was talk of not having a possible Super Bowl halftime show. There's been talk about wiping out the Super Bowl halftime show. Because they're saying due to the inclement weather, this halftime show might not go on next year between the border of New York and New Jersey. And so I want to ask you first, Max, but do you think this is fair at all towards the people who are going to be attending the Super Bowl next year? Does it happen to come into fruition?
I don't know about fair and foul, but I will say this. The NFL is going to lose a lot of money if they do this. And that's the bottom line. I know we like to talk about sports and sports, but when it comes to something like this, it's all about money. And plain and simple, if you get rid of the halftime show, you eliminate a portion of your viewers. I know we all like to think that everyone's watching the Super Bowl for the football, but they aren't. They're watching it for commercials and the halftime show. And that is just as attractive to viewers as the game itself. So if you take away the halftime show, I think you take away what makes the Super Bowl so special. You're talking about some of the best performers in the world that come out and say, you know what, this is the Super Bowl. I have to make this the best performance I ever do. And you eliminate that portion of it. You eliminate some of the fans. You know, there's a reason the Super Bowl gets 50 million views and the average NFL game does not. That's the bottom line. There's a reason that the Super Bowl blows the World Series and NBA Finals out of the water in terms of ratings. And it's because what happens with the game, the commercials, which some people view as declining. So now you're taking away the raunchy commercials that a lot of people viewed as the funniest, and then you're going to take away the halftime performance. And I know the NFL thinks they're cleaning it all up, but note to Roger Goodell, you're losing money.
What about you, Sean?
I say you got to have a halftime show, just like Max said, because it is a money-type thing. And come on, it's the first outdoor Super Bowl that you're ever going to have. I know there was a Super Bowl. Actually, it wasn't the Super Bowl yet when Lombardi had the Packers and Lambeau Field and that, but still, with this being the first outdoor Super Bowl, you got to have a halftime show, and most likely you will have big names since it is the first ever outdoor game, like outdoor Super Bowl, like I was mentioning. You'll have some big name acts putting their bids in to get the gig. So, you know, I mean, come on. Let's not take away something that, like Max was saying, fans look forward to as part of the Super Bowl game itself.
Yeah, people are thinking it's Roger Goodell because, everyone blames it on the NFL commissioner nowadays, Roger Goodell. And so this is somehow weird how it just popped up. I mean, to me, you guys are just exactly right on the ball. It's just I don't think you give up the Super Bowl halftime show, in which a lot of people, a lot of people and non-football fans actually tune in for. And just like Max said, the NFL could be losing some money out of not having the Super Bowl halftime show. But, yeah, hopefully they just have that Super Bowl halftime show next year. And we hopefully get to see someone very special next year, as we were just talking about in the Super Bowl postgame show not too long ago, who we wanted to actually see next year at the Super Bowl performing during the halftime show. With 3 minutes left, I have one more thing to get to, which is Alistair Overeem. I want to first go to you, Max, real quick, but are you at all a fan of MMA?
Yeah, and I think a guy like Overeem is good for the sport. You know, how technically sound is he? How fit is he for a ground-and-pound type of game? That's the conversation we have. You know, at the end of the day, I know UFC fighters will try to contest that they are athletes. I understand you are athletes, and you're some of the most impressive athletes in the world. The fact of the matter is, mixed martial arts is entertainment, more so than any other sport on the planet. Only boxing really matches it there, but boxing is a different type of sport. A guy like Overeem, that big, that powerful, that's the ultimate entertainment. That's the ultimate David versus Goliath story. And I think that he's good for the sport. He's good for the business. And, you know, whatever result we see, it'll be good.
Well, I'm quite surprised that you're in MMA, how, just like you said, MMA has evolved over time. The way fighting has become nowadays, boxing has really punched the ground. Somewhat, but you know, as far as MMA goes, it's been evolving over time. And Dana White, he's been having this UFC promotion for almost over 10 years now. And so it just keeps on running and running and keeps on evolving and evolving. And as I want to just lastly touch on Alistair Overeem, he in fact lost this past Saturday to Antonio Silva on UFC 156 on pay-per-view. Just like you said, Max, Alistair Overeem is a very, very big guy. The only thing that really mattered, though, was in this match was that Overeem didn't really try. He didn't really try. He kept on saying that, oh, this guy, Antonio Silva, he's nothing. He's a nobody. And as the match was going on, too, I just want to point this out as well, but it seemed to me that Overeem wasn't even trying to defend himself that much. It felt like, he just kept on easily giving Antonio Silva more of the edge. And that's what happened when Antonio Silva, at the end of, I think, round three, just was beating down on Overeem, which led to a knockout. Now, Overeem's going to be left probably now having to once again go through his way and try to once again try to get a title shot while now this guy Antonio Silva will be able to now possibly get a title shot. It might take a match or two, but you know, to put it basically all down the line here is that Antonio Silva is going to get more quickly to the title now since he's won against Overeem this past Saturday. But yeah, it was a good match. Overeem, I thought could have won, but it went to Antonio Silva, and he was the underdog in this match. So that about does it here. I want to thank our listeners for joining. You can find this episode on iTunes. I totally forgot this on some of our past episodes. I've been meaning to say this, but on our Blog Talk Radio page, you can post a Facebook comment, post whatever you feel is good about the show, and we'll totally appreciate it. So do that. You can also like us on Facebook. You can like this episode on Facebook. Once again, you can find this episode on iTunes. And we'll most likely be back on Sunday, so tune in for the very first show of the Week in Review. Peace out.